This is really going to be introductory in nature in terms of the topic that we're going to be beginning today. We are starting a new topic, which is electrochemistry. Electrochemistry is a study of redox reactions. And so, in fact, I want to start with a redox reaction. Of zinc solid reacting with nickel nitrate to form nickel metal and zinc nitrate. First off, how can we identify whether this is a redox reaction? How can we tell? Okay, something's being reduced, something's being oxidized. What does oxidation mean? Besides the opposite of being reduced. Okay, so one way of saying is that it loses electrons. Another way of saying it is that the oxidation state goes up. What is oxidation state? That might be a tricky one for you all to answer because the way that most general chemistry textbooks are structured, you don't really ever get around to learning the true difference between oxidation state and formal charge because you have to memorize a bunch of rules to just use them because you're too busy learning stoichiometry or molecular structure. But really, the only difference between the two counting systems, because that's all they are, they're systems, not real numbers per se, they differ only with how we treat bonds. I think we've already talked this quarter about the difference between covalent and ionic bonds, where a covalent bond is where we imagine that electrons are shared evenly between atoms, where ionic bonds are where we imagine electrons just been transferred. Well, that's also the view we take when trying to count electrons, or that's the problem we run into, which is to how do we deal with bonds? If we had something like the oxygen-hydrogen bond in water. That's a really polar bond. So it acts kind of like a covalent bond because, yes, electrons are shared, but it also acts like an ionic bond in some senses because it's got this polarity to it due to the big electronegativity difference between the atoms. So if we want to count where electrons are, should we take one electron from the bond and give it to each atom? Because it's a covalent bond, or do we give both electrons to the more electronegative element because it's more like an ionic bond? And the answer is that we do both. We have oxidation state where we treat everything like ionic bonds, and we have formal charge where we have everything treated like covalent bonds. Like I said, I know you probably haven't heard that definition before, and that's going to be something we tackle in lecture when we have more time, but you need to know what that difference is just so that you know how to calculate oxidation states, because that's what we really care about, because that is what is changing here. Zinc, as an element, it doesn't have any bonds, and so we can automatically figure out what charge it is, which for something that's isolated like that, charge is the same thing as oxidation state. So in the elemental form, it's zero. But when we go to the compound zinc nitrate, we know what the charge of nitrate is, right? -1. So if that whole compound is neutral, what must be the charge on zinc? +2, because if there's two nitrates, we need a +2 on the zinc to balance out. And so from the zinc to the nitrate, the oxidation state, not operating system, goes from 0 to +2, which is oxidation. Now, why is it called oxidation? Because that sounds like oxygen. Well, because oxygen is the second most electronegative element on the periodic table. And so when oxygen reacts with something else, almost invariably, it's going to be that oxygen takes electrons away from something else. So by extension, we call that process oxidation. If we look at the nickel,
Oop.
The oxidation state there goes from plus 2 to 0. And we call that reduction, which is short for reduction of oxidation state. So I know I kind of babbled this whole thing about the difference between oxidation state and formal charge, but it's a counting system. And in that counting system, that means that zinc lost 2 electrons and nickel gained 2 electrons. That's all that's really going on in this reaction, and so that's why this is a redox reaction. Redox being short for reduction oxidation reaction. So this is the type of reaction we're going to talk about, which I know you've gotten an introduction to redox reactions before, but this is a particular kind. Or we do something to harness the energy of this reaction, because if everything's mixed together in solution the way that it's shown here, then yeah, you've got a direct reaction going along. Electrons are able to flow. But what if we were to able to direct those electrons somehow? Put them through a wire. Maybe that wire is hooked up to a light or something. In other words, we can harness the electrons coming out of this reaction to somehow power something else. So that's where electrochemistry comes in. That's the experiment that we're going to be doing today, which is to construct a type of cell that it's called, a voltaic cell, a cell where the reaction happens spontaneously, as it would for this particular written reaction, but one where we can take advantage of that electron flow. So what could we do in order to cause the electrons to reroute themselves? Well, what if we did not have everything put directly into solution like this? The way this would work in real life is you'd take a piece of zinc metal, put it into the nickel nitrate, you'd see the zinc slowly dissolve, and you'd see an accumulation maybe on the beaker of the nickel that's falling out of the solution. Actually, not on the beaker, but wherever the current is going from, the thing that's called the electrode. Well, what if we separate that out? What if we have the zinc doing its own thing in one solution and the nickel doing something else in its own solution, like this? We could have a piece of zinc metal that will be in a solution of zinc nitrate. In that beaker, all that essentially would be happening then is zinc would be oxidized, causing the release of 2 electrons. Now let's do everything with nickel in the other beaker. Here we have a piece of nickel metal. In solution, we'd have nickel nitrate. And the reaction going on here would be that nickel is gaining 2 electrons to become a metal. Now that 0 that I'm writing is representing neutral charge or 0 oxidation state. And it's to emphasize that it's the metal. It would mean the same thing if we left the 0 out, but it's just there to emphasize that you're getting that metal either as the product for the nickel or as the reagent over here for the zinc. Now, if one side is only making electrons, one side is only taking electrons, then nothing's going to happen until we connect the two. And that's the whole point, where now we can have an electron flow going from the left-hand side to the right-hand side. A moment ago, I stumbled over the word for this thing that you stick in solution because I wanted to define it now. One of these we call the anode, and one of these we call the cathode, and together they're called electrodes. How do we remember which one is which? In English, there's a convenient trick for remembering. If you notice on the left-hand side here, It's only oxidation that is going on. On the right-hand side, it's reduction. So on the left-hand side, the anode has oxidation, the cathode has reduction. So it's two vowels that match up on the left and two consonants that match up on the right. So I know that's just coincidence, but it works, so we might as well take advantage of it. So this looks like maybe a reaction would happen now, except this is still not complete. Because on the left-hand side, if this reaction were really happening and zinc keeps getting oxidized, that means zinc ions are getting stuffed into solution, which means you're building up a positive charge in solution. But that can only go on for a very little amount of time, really zero. Because as you start stuffing charges, positive charges in solution, they're going to want to react with something negative to come back to neutral again if you get much of an imbalance. And so in other words, maybe the reaction would start but would get hardly any distance and then would stop. It reached the end point. So we need to somehow be able to dissipate those positive charges. We have the same problem on the right-hand side. If nickel in the solution is reacting and it keeps getting pulled out of solution, well, nitrate is still sticking around in solution. And so you would be building up negative charges, which again can't happen beyond a certain point. The solution then is to make one more connection between the two halves. And this connection is often referred to in this kind of example as a salt bridge. And that salt bridge contains some kind of non-reactive salt that's just there to help balance out in terms of charge. So, for example, the compound that you're going to use in today's experiment is ammonium nitrate. Nitrate, because it's negative charge, would flow towards the anode because that's where the zinc cations are accumulating. If we had ammonium as our other ion in the salt bridge, it would want to flow towards the right, towards the nickel's reaction chamber, because that's where the nitrates, the negative charges, are building up. Yes? The salt bridge, it would be a solution. The physical form can take, the way it's done physically can take different forms. This sort of classic wet solution version of a voltaic cell, it would be itself a solution that would be in that tube. Now, the ends of the tube would only be semi-permeable because you wouldn't want complete flow of the solutions back and forth, because then you'd be in the situation where the two sides again would just meet. You'd have a direct reaction, and that's not what we want. We want to force the electron flow. So these are semi-permeable membranes, at least on this type of cell. One of the later lectures that we'll have is about different types of batteries, because effectively that's what I've described here. A redox reaction where we have a negative side where the electrons are coming from and a positive side where the electrons are going to. And of course there's many different kinds of batteries, so we'll be discussing some of those systems after we fill in lots of details, because there's a lot of detail I'm purposely skimming over, like how do we know which way the reaction's going to occur? One of these metals is better at losing electrons than the other. One of these is a better reducing agent. One of the metals is better at taking electrons. One of them's a better oxidizing agent. And there's something known as the electrochemical series that we can use to determine which way the reaction will occur. There's also this thing, voltage, that we're going to be measuring today. I know that many of you haven't had physics, at least not since high school, so we have to talk just very, very briefly about what voltage is in the context of this chemistry class. to then talk about how would voltage change depend on what type of cell that we assemble. That's actually what we're going to be investigating in today's reaction, except all I'm going to focus on is what this cell is and how we're going to build one, because we need to just get through the experiment today, and then I can talk about the theory over the next several lab and lectures. I don't know if some of you heard on the way out, but it is likely, if we this section manages to get through the experiment, that this might be the only day that we do the electrochemistry experiment here in lab, because we got a day behind by my being absent. So if I can catch up in lab, because we're able to at least get through the measurement, I'm comfortable taking some time pushing back the lab report due date, which I know will upset everybody that you have to wait to do the lab report, right? So I'm fine waiting on the lab report if it takes us a few days to come back to this and talk about what the results mean. So let me just very quickly review what this is, this cell, because I'm then going to show you how we're going to make one for today's experiment. So I started out saying here's a redox reaction, talk very briefly about what reduction and oxidation are. We'll do a review and lecture about oxidation states, how that's different from formal charge. We'll come back and talk about oxidation and reduction, and we'll talk about balancing redox reactions, because I understand that not everybody got that in Chem 1A. I know in my own class last quarter, we did not complete redox balancing. So how many of you did not get balancing of redox equations in the past? You all did. But the morning section, unless they misunderstood what I was asking, half of them said they had not gotten it before. Okay, I will double check, but we may still need to do a review. So we'll deal with the mechanics of redox reactions. What I then presented next, though, was a way of harnessing that reaction to make use of the electron flow that's going on. And so I said, let's separate the two halves of the reaction. In fact, that's what they're normally referred to as, half reactions. Of course, they are only half reactions, because if you only have reduction or if you only have oxidation, it's an impossible situation because you're producing all just positive or negative charges. Connect the system up in a circuit, though, and now we have a voltaic cell, a battery, something where energy can be spontaneously generated. How are we going to make one of these cells in today's lab? They're going to be extremely rudimentary. I will tell you that in advance. You might almost laugh at the setup that we have, but it's done the way it is because it was cheap, and as long as you do it right, for the most part, it works. So why go with something super fancy if you can get away with doing something on the cheap? So here's what it's going to look like. You'll have a kit that you check out from the stock room that has these bits and pieces in it. You're going to be able to work with partners today because there was a time where we didn't have enough of the kits to have every student work individually. So it might work out well that we do it in partners, though, because there's several activities that you have to do. Preparation of the solution and then being able to hold the system together as you measure it. The system is this. You'll have a stopper that has two holes in it. In those two holes, you'll have two very small pipette droppers, eyedroppers. These two eyedroppers are what are going to hold the two different solutions. What two different solutions? Well, you have several pairs of solution electrode combinations that you're going to try out. And what we're going to see is how does changing the concentration have an effect on how many electrons get generated, which is voltage, or how does the identity of the metal affect what voltage that you get out? So since you can kind of see it over the left-hand side of the board here, let me point out that, for example, you'll have a copper electrode in a copper solution. That'll be one side. then you'll have a silver electrode in a silver solution that'll be on the other side. I'll explain this notation in a moment, but put very quickly, the double lines here represent the two different solutions. So you'll have the two types of solutions that you're putting together. You'll have a cotton plug down at the bottom that seemed to be the most problematic of the setup this morning. And I'll explain in a moment why. This is the stopper. And these are the eyedroppers. You'll have a little cap . When I say a cap, I mean literally just that, something that might close up the top of a test tube or something like that. Except we're going to turn it upside down and use it as the cup to hold the salt bridge solution. In that salt bridge cap, you'll have ammonium nitrate, which should be a solution that's already prepared for your kit. Yes, that nitrate might absorb up through the cotton, which you want to have happen because you do need ion flow in order for the circuit to work, in order for it to be a closed circuit. The problem is if the cotton plug is too tight, you won't get maybe that flow. And so you're not going to get ion flow, so you're not going to get any good stable current. The opposite is a problem as well. If you don't put the cotton plugs in there tightly enough at all, then the two solutions and the two droppers just spill on out into that cup, and everything reacts directly. So you can't get a measured voltage there either. So cotton plugs need to be in fairly tight, tight enough that the solutions that you're going to put in the droppers don't just automatically drop through. But yes, if there's some cotton particularly sticking out at the bottom, some of that is going to absorb up the ammonium nitrate solution, which is perfectly fine. So you have all of this, plus then you have two metal electrodes. To duplicate this picture in slightly simpler form, you'll have the setup with the stopper and all that you're going to hook up to a voltmeter. That voltmeter, if you're not familiar with a voltmeter, if you've never seen one before, has all kinds of settings on it to measure different kinds of quantities. You want to measure voltage, and you want to measure what's called direct current. So there'll be a marking on there that says VDC, and that stands for voltage direct current. In case you're not familiar with it, direct current is where you have a consistent positive voltage in one terminal, a consistent negative voltage in the other, and that voltage level remains constant. There's another form, AC, alternating current, which is what we tend to use in wall outlets. And that has to do with the way that the power is generated, that you have some kind of turbine that's turning over. And so you have this periodic swapping back and forth between negative and positive voltage. So the voltage changes, where direct current, it does not. So there are two different kinds of voltages, two different ways of measuring. Inside of that, there's different settings for the direct current, depending on how large a voltage that you're measuring. We're not generating very large voltages, and so you want to set it on 2,000 M, which stands for 2,000 millivolts. So 2 volt max. Because it's reporting it to you in millivolts, just remember later on you're going to divide all your numbers by 1,000, because it doesn't put the decimal point in for you. It just gives you the millivolts. So what you're going to be doing in the lab today is you're going to be assembling a set of solutions, set of electrodes, and then measuring the voltage. When you measure the voltage, depending on which way you hook it up, you might get a positive number or a negative number. You want to measure everything such that it is a positive voltage, and we'll get into the whole sign convention later on. What does negative mean? What does positive mean? For right now, just measure in the way that gives you the positive number. And then there's one other detail that goes along that. Make sure to write down what that voltage is. But then one of the electrodes that you're going to use to measure is red. One of them is black. Some of you might have seen that before on wires that lead to batteries. Often we color code black and red like that. So you need to write down whichever of the electrodes ends up being the one that you touch with the red probe in order to get you a positive voltage. So in other words, from your viewing perspective, my left hand, if this hand has the red probe, if I hook it up one way and I get negative and hook up another way and get positive, I'll leave it the way that gives me a positive, and then I'll write down which one of the electrodes I was touching with that red probe to get the positive voltage. So you have 9 solutions, which means you're going to get 9 voltages plus which way the probe was hooked up. Does that make enough sense about what you need to measure? Okay. Then as far as what the different cells are, let me explain this notation a little bit, just briefly. Of course, if we're following this notation as written, this will give away the answer to which way do you hook the probe up. Because the standard way to write a cell, like this first one here, is for the left-hand side to be where the anode is, and for the right-hand side to be the cathode. That's the standard. Maybe we shouldn't presume that if this is telling you to keep track of which side the electrode is going on. But if this was a real cell, then on the left-hand side, that's always the oxidation side. The right-hand side, that's the reduction. The two things on the left-hand side of that double line, that is the type of electrode used, and then the solution, the important ion that's in that solution surrounding the electrode. So this would mean in one of these two droppers, you would have copper solution, which all the solutions today are nitrates. So you'd have that copper nitrate, and then you'd put a piece of copper metal in. In the other dropper, you would then have silver nitrate and a silver electrode. In all of the experiments, you'll use ammonium nitrate as the same salt bridge, except that you might want to change out the ammonium nitrate, use a fresh little batch of it each time. Now, in the way that I just showed you the cell notation, I did not list concentrations. Your lab texts quotes specific concentrations here. 0.2 molar is the concentration that you're given as a standard in your kit. So there's some of the solutions that call for 0.01 molar. There's two ways we can get that. There are some small bottles here of a pre-made solution, but I found out after the fact that at some point instructors stopped using those and instead had the students make a dilution of their solutions. And there's a note that's already written up on the board here, which I'll transfer to the written notes in a moment. It says that you can make the dilution by doing the following. You're supposed to go from 0.2 molar to 0.01 molar. That's a factor of 20 dilution. So in other words, if I had 1 milliliter, I need to turn that into 20 milliliters of volume. Well, a convenient way to do that, instead of having to measure out milliliters, is to just measure out drops. Because it turns out that 1 milliliter is very approximately equal to 20 drops. So suppose we wanted to make 1 milliliter of a 0.01 molar solution given a 0.2 molar solution. Again, that's a dilution factor of 20. So if I took one drop of my original solution and then I took 19 drops of water, that would end up being a total of 20 drops. There's my volume factor of 20, and that's how you can make the 0.01 molar solutions. Take one drop of the 0.2 molar, add 19 drops of water, and that should give you approximately 0.01 molar. You have to do that for, I think, the zinc solution. The silver and copper might be available still in pre-prepared form, but you will have to yourself do that dilution when you want the zinc solution. Because of the potential for it to leak through that cotton ball, I might mix the solution up separately before you pour it in, just to make sure you got the same consistent concentration throughout. There is also one more pair of solutions that you're going to make where there's a precipitate involved. And again, you need to make that off to the side and then pour that whole thing into your reaction tube. The directions are behind the screen here. You're going to take one drop of either the copper nitrate or silver nitrate solution, depending on which one's being called for in that particular case. And then you'll mix with it sodium sulfide. It is mislabeled on some of the labels. Some of the labels say NaS2, which it is Na2S. That's sodium sulfide. You're likely to get, I think, a black or brown precipitate. That whole mixture you can just pour into the dropper as the solution for that particular electrode. So the 0.2 molar solutions, they're already prepared. They're the little droppers that are already prepared for you. Again, for the 0.01 molar solutions, you will need to do that dilution trick, especially if we run out of the stock solutions. And then there's these two here that are listed as, for example, copper sulfide S-2, combination of copper sulfide solid with a sulfide ion floating around. So that little set of directions is right behind the screen here. All of the compounds in today's experiment, you're going to be able to dispose of in the same waste bottle. As far as hazards, you have the solid electrodes, which you don't have to worry about, the zinc, silver, or copper. The copper nitrate, zinc nitrate solutions, of course, I wouldn't drink them, but they're not much in the way of hazards otherwise. Of course, if you spill them on you, then you'd want to wash them off. The silver nitrate solution. Does anybody know anything about silver nitrate? Yeah? Yes, if you get silver nitrate on your skin, it acts as an oxidizing agent. The silver does. And it will oxidize your skin, reducing the silver, and the combination of two, you get these black stains that won't come out until your skin grows out. So I don't know that it has any long-term health effects, but you won't be able to wash the stuff out, so you're going to have to live with whatever markings you've got for the next few weeks. No, I do not recommend this as your way of wimping out and getting your cheap temporary tattoo. Just because you don't want to oxidize your skin uncontrollably in that way. So don't get any bright ideas. Some people hear that and think, hey, no, don't do it. In fact, be even more careful about your clothing if you care about your clothing, because it will ruin your clothing in the same way. And those stains won't come out. So if you have an alternate, like, sweatshirt or something that you can put on so not ruin your clothes, this might be one of the labs that you want to do that. Okay, so that's disposal. Everything goes into the same waste bottle, and that's safety. I think I've run through everything that we need to in order to get through the lab. Like I said, there's tons of the detail and theory behind this I know I haven't talked about, but we'll do that when we have the lab and lecture time. Question? They do touch, yes. It's not obvious from the way that I've drawn this. But yes, you want the ends of these to be submerged in that ammonium nitrate. And again, it's fine if the ammonium nitrate kind of creeps back up into the cotton plugs. Because, as you said, you want to close that circuit and so you can have flow.